Hey everyone, Sean here. Before we get to the show today, I have an exciting announcement for you all. My go-to-market services business, Mine at Light Consulting, has a new name, new look, new feel, Beacon GTM. And we are still doing all the same type of work at Beacon GTM. We are helping founders and revenue leaders improve their go-to-market execution. One of my partners is a former sales leader. One of my partners is a former customer team leader. And with my background in ops, we've got a pretty good chunk of the go-to-market spectrum covered. So we're excited to unveil this new brand for everyone to check out. Head to beacongtm.com to learn more about it. All right, that's enough of that. On with the show.
When you've gone from being a founder-led sales motion into being a machine, you kind of have to have all this data instrumented so that, you know, if you're going to build a machine, like machines need a couple things. They need instructions, they need calculations.
Hey everyone, welcome to Operations, the show where we look under the hood of companies in hypergrowth. My name is Sean Lee. So you're sitting there, it's Q1 of the new year. You're listening to this episode. All your plans for the new year have been out for a little while. You're off and running in your new fiscal year. So how are things going? Were you able to help your company quickly transition from planning mode to execution mode? That's what today's conversation is all about. And the person to help the rest of us more successfully make that transition is Michael Heilman. Michael spent the last 8 years building both the sales and sales operations teams at Demandbase, where he saw explosive growth and most recently served as their VP of worldwide sales operations. Today, Mike has his own consulting business, Scaled Rev. In our conversation, Mike and I talk about the combination of instructions and calculations in a go-to-market machine. We talk about how leadership can and should set the tone for your transition into execution and why we've all been setting our pipeline goals versus quota wrong all along. So to start, let's jump right into the transition from planning mode into execution mode and how Michael thought about this moment at Demandbase.
This is something that's just, it's super important that companies, you know, get this stuff right. Because like the plan sets the goals for the organization. And for those of you that work at SaaS organizations with like relatively complex products, pipeline's everything. You know, the equation's pretty simple. If you hit pipeline goals, odds are you're going to actually hit your numbers, not just this quarter, but in out quarters as well. And the equation's also pretty simple too. Like if you actually miss your pipeline goals, the likelihood of you missing current quarter is there, but more likely you're going to miss future quarters. So like the relative importance of building a model that is actually tuned and has put, people put a lot of thought into is really, really important for a company because like the consequences of not putting something together correctly are pretty big. And like really well-run companies, they actually understand the mechanics. They know exactly how many opportunities it's going to take, not just in total, but like across the entire business, all the segments, all the teams, all the regions. And they know exactly how many opportunities it's going to take to feed those engines to actually hit their bookings targets, right? Really bad companies, either they screw up the planning part or they actually got the planning part right, but they just can't hit the goals. Kind of two different problems or whatever, but it's really important on these things. But I guess on your question, you know, I think you were reflecting on like, hey, there's a number, there is a bookings goal, right? And like oftentimes there's like a board plan and then there's also a number that the people see at like a company all hands, for example. And there's an all-up annual number, you know, and a quarterly number. And I think what I've seen, and I don't know if you've seen the same thing on your end, but like, I think the way that it works is you take that company all hands number, and from there, you build up, you know, your quota capacity that's essentially going to get handed out to the field in the form of quota. And typically, the kind of the deviation between like company plan number, the number that people see it, like an all hands number to like the amount of total quota that's distributed to the field. Usually it's about like a 20% float. And I'm not sure if you saw that in, you know, kind of in your time frame too, but like, so basically it's saying, hey, look, we know there's going to be rep churn. We know there's going to be stuff that happens in the field that, you know, where we lose, you know, quota capacity and so forth. So we want to have some buffer. And I think what's really important as you create, you know, this waterfall model is that you actually use the quota capacity number. I think it would be really dangerous, for example, for like a marketing team to say, okay, great, let's take board plan number, the smallest number, or let's take the number that's shown at a company all hands number. I think you kind of have to take the entire sales number, which is a reflection of quota capacity. And all these things just kind of like help build in buffer so that, man, if you don't hit those targets, like the consequence of like missing, for example, a board number, just it starts to minimize, you know, some of that risk. That's what I've typically seen on that. I think other key assumptions, you know, that you have to have in place is that you've got to have like really, really strong alignment and definition around what your ICP is and what your TAM and TEL definitions are. And that really has to be agreed on with like sales, CX, eng, and leadership. And I say that because at the end of the day, this entire model, if you think about it, it's like, it's essentially saying, what are we going to let in the door for sales to pursue? And if the wrong stuff is getting let in the door for sales to pursue, that's a problem, right? Because all of a sudden you could be hitting goals and fundamentally it's feeding the engine the wrong material, right? So like, I think sometimes that's a squirrely topic for some companies, or for example, sales may think they understand what ICP or marketing may think, but like maybe engineering has a point of view or maybe support org has a point of view. So like, I don't know, as I think about a modern go-to-market effort, all the heads of the organization have to actually agree on like what our ICP and TAM and TEL is.
So according to Michael, in this transition into execution mode, pipeline is everything. How you think about pipeline, how you measure it, and how you set goals around it will all have ripple effects throughout your organization. I also appreciate his perspective that you can't, as he puts it, feed the engine the wrong material. If marketing appears to be hitting its pipeline goals, but the pipeline is garbage, then guess what? Nobody wins. Michael takes this even a step further by saying that pipeline targets shouldn't be set based on a company's bookings plan, but instead should be set based on the quota allocated to a sales team. So let's make an example. If your bookings goal is $1 million and you deploy 20% more quota than your target, so your sales team has a quota of $1.2 million, Michael recommends setting pipeline targets to hit that $1.2 million number and not the company's $1 million target. This way, the amount of pipeline that marketing is aiming to hit will be enough to make all of the individuals on the sales team successful. I love this idea. It would have saved me a lot of pain over the course of my career, but it's not without its own friction. For example, I asked Michael, how does he get marketing leaders to sign up for a higher number?
I'm not going to say it's frictionless. It depends on compensation and things in that regard. But like a lot of times marketing is comped on like bookings, target attainment and so forth. And if at the end of the day, like bookings attainment is calculated based on like the number that's shown at all hands, in theory, they could even miss their goals and still like get their compensation, right? So like, I don't know, these are some of the things that you have to think through as like a marketer. And to be candid, I think the harder part is like the quota capacity part itself. Like reps are like, wait a second, my number is like really high, right? Because the more float you put on top, those quotas get really big. And then the other challenging part too is op counts begin to grow. What that typically amounts to is you end up with like the friction between trailing productivity of SDRs versus the quota that you're going to need to assign SDRs. And sometimes that poses headcount questions and the need for growth of headcount in the SDR org and so forth. But I've seen that be friction. And yeah, the marketing department, they have a hard time swallowing it too, but it's tough for everyone. You know, it's not just a singular department that has a tough time with it.
And so it also sounds like what you're saying is in order to even think about the execution arm, there's a bunch of prep and kind of prerequisites that need to happen in order to make that a reality, right? So you started to talk about some definitions, right? You got to be on the same page about what your ICP is.
That's right.
And then I think another extension is all these different components that you're talking about, bookings, pipeline, op count, conversion rates, you actually have to be instrumented in order to show all those things, which like might not always be the case.
Yep.
Right. And so how do you start to kind of look at your plan? And you probably had to do this as part of the planning process as well. How do you make sure that you even have the ability to report on how you're doing against all of the other components of the plan before your year starts?
Yeah. I mean, this gets to like data prep and so forth. And I'll just broadly say that really early stage companies are going to struggle with this stuff, right? Because I mean, early stage companies, it's like, hey, we got five sales guys and we're going to try and each, you know, get two deals a quarter or whatever. And the problem's a bit of a different challenge. I think to the stuff that you're talking about and the stuff that I'm, you know, really familiar with, which is like, when you've gone from being a founder-led sales motion into being a machine, you kind of have to have all this data instrumented so that, you know, if you're going to build a machine, like machines need a couple things. They need instructions, they need calculations. And instructions is kind of that enablement layer, right? Like how are we going to like repeatedly tell people and help people understand how to like come into this role and perform? And if they do these things, they're going to perform well. You know, the calculations part is kind of like that falls on the RevOps sales ops part, which is like, hey, man, this is one big equation. We have enough data now because the business has grown big enough to actually look backwards in time and do analysis and understand what are our conversion rates at every step of these opportunities and understand all the way from upper funnel, all the way to our close rates in the business. We have a really good understanding of how the business performs. And there is a growth curve to get there, right? And I'm happy to chat through some of that stuff with you too. But there's a lot of work that has to be done on the data side in order to prepare this so that people can make these calculations to inform models like a marketing waterfall.
And I think for each of those steps in the waterfall, taking the time now in both the instructions and the calcs side of this machine to align on those definitions, you have to do that now. Otherwise, you're going to be arguing about the definition of an MQL all year long.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I think you have to get that stuff in place so that when you get to that first moment of reporting on actuals versus targets for the year, it's not a conversation of, well, wait a second, what counts as an MQL again?
That's right.
Is this in the ICB bucket or is it not? Right?
That's why I feel like probably the two biggest things that you have to nail as a business would be the ICP. And then, of course, the list that branches off that, like your target addressable market and target account list. If you get the ICP and you're actually like aggressively conservative, most businesses think they can sell to everyone, right? I'm a big fan of saying like at the end of the day, you can't sell to everyone. And the proof is in the pudding of renewal rates. And so look at trailing renewals data. You're going to know who your real customers are and the stuff that churns out. You're just not ready for it. Or maybe they're not ready for you, right? And so use that as your guide on ICP. And that's going to solve the top end thing, which is what you're alluding to, which is like, oh man, there's a ton of stuff coming through. Like we're not fighting about things. So you have to nail that ICP piece so that as a company, you agree that if it's in this funnel, we believe we should be able to win this stuff. And then the other key thing is, and this is where I've seen things get a little bit wacky for people too, is just what is the definition of pipeline? And that's a critically important thing because that's going to influence all your modeling of how many MQLs or MQAs do we need to get to pipe, and then furthermore, pipe to close ratios. And that's where you start to see, that's where like you can start to see some wacky numbers, right? Or like abnormalities where like super high close rates, but really low on the upper funnel. So it's like, wait, what's good? It's like, okay, well, we have a really high bar for pipeline or vice versa. Like sometimes the bar is really low to get into pipeline. You might see that at like early stage startup. But then you see like 10% win rates, right? And so it's about finding the happy medium there. And I think it's critically important that you come to like a really strong agreement on what is defined as pipeline.
Machines are instructions and calculations. Instructions and calculations. And Michael's point here is you have to get everyone aligned on what goes into both those instructions and calculations. If you don't, you're going to spend your whole year haggling over everyone's different expectations and interpretations of the plan. But as we discussed, you have to be instrumented well in order to pull this off. And it's not just about counting stuff. That's only the beginning. So I'm curious what Michael has done to ensure that he's ready from a data perspective to make this switch from planning to execution.
When I think about like data readiness, and it's going to be in support of the funnel, which we haven't really touched on too much, but I'll kind of dive into the funnel and kind of what I'm familiar with. And I know there's a million different ways you could do this, but I think generically speaking, this is going to relate to many people. What I'm familiar with is there's kind of like two aspects of it at the very top end, and that would be like the MQL and then the MQA. And those are kind of the top entry points. And then underneath that, you kind of have a common system for traveling through to pipeline. And that'd be either MQA, MQL, traveling through to, you know, qualification and then into SQL. SQL and then SQL to pipe. We had an intermediary step, SQL, you know, to discovery and then a discovery to pipe, which I think a lot of people also have. But I think to that point, as we think about this, you're going to need to understand a few things as it relates to that funnel, right? So like we talked a bit about, okay, there's a bookings target. Okay, well, we know we're going to need a certain amount of opportunities and we can talk through how do we like get to the right amount of opportunities. But let's just say you've come up with the right amount of opportunities. Okay, this quarter for this team or at a total level, we know we're going to need X amount of opportunities. Well, what's that math equation to back into? Well, how many MQAs or how many MQLs should we be actually be striving towards? And like fundamentally, what are the goals at the very top level? You know, what are the goals of SQL? What are the goals of DISCO? And what are the goals of pipeline? And that comes into conversion rates, right? And also some understanding too of velocity. And I think like data preparedness there, the things that I would think about would be on the opportunity, you do want to be kind of tracking every aspect of the funnel that you're reporting on. And so one piece of it would be kind of yes, no. Did it make it to this stage? Did it travel from this stage to this stage? And did it graduate up through? And that's one part of it. So we understand like how far did it go? I think another field that you might want to consider too is the velocity aspect of it, which is, okay, this thing was created, but a certain amount of time passes obviously in between. So it's aging, right? And you kind of do also want to understand, well, how long was it in MQL versus SQL versus DISCO and ultimately getting to pipe? And that helps you on the velocity side. And so, you know, you start to think about maybe date captures or time deltas in between or running total of time or whatever, you know, and that's statically captured on the opportunity so that you can report on it later. Third, this is a little bit more nuanced, but it's something that I believe in because like, and I'm sure you get this all the time too, but we always get asked for historical reporting. You know, you get a new CRO that comes in and what do they say? Oh, I want the last trailing 4 quarters, 6 quarters, 8 quarters of data and show me what it looked like. And the truth is that a lot of this reporting on the opportunity basis, yeah, it's going to be, did it make it to this stage or that stage? But it's going to be about the accounts. And a lot of that account data is going to be like firmographic data. What segment were they in? What industry? How many employees do they have or how many salespeople? What was their tech stack? You know, these types of things. But the truth is those fields are alive. And so running that report in the present about data that happened 2 years ago, it's going to be all over the board. You're going to get all these different answers. And so I'm always a big fan of, in the opportunity, you actually record very key elements of your data statically on that opportunity at the moment of conversion so that if you ever need to do historical reporting, you can actually see the business as it was in that moment of time versus some, because then you could have the wrong derived understanding in the present.
Yeah, and I think that concept extends beyond just the firmographic factors about the account. It also applies to the people who work at your organization,
yeah,
right? People get promoted, people switch teams, they have different folks that were servicing exactly or working right on that account at that moment in time that are not on it now. And so, you know, the more kind of snapshots that you have on the opportunity, I think the best way to think about the opportunity in general is it's a moment in time,
yeah,
right? It's a sale at a moment in time. And so everything you're capturing on it should be reflected. One thing that I wanted to ask about, as you're talking about kind of this funnel and you're talking about all of these different factors, velocity, timing, aging, I think ops folks, myself included, tend to over-optimize things for the new business funnel.
Yeah.
When in reality, for a lot of companies, upgrade, expansion, existing customer dollars will make up a significant portion of the plan.
Yeah, that's right.
How do you think about everything you've talked about thus far from a new business versus an existing customer lens?
It's kind of silly, but it took me a while to figure this out in my career. But I think what it was I had always worked in like startup companies.
New businesses with the lifeblood.
It's all about new business. It's all about new logos. And it wasn't until we grew the business from 30 million to over 200 million that I started to realize like, okay, you see these inversion points where it's like there is a point in time where a business switches and the percentage of new business versus customer upsell business starts to switch. Maybe it's 70% new business, 30% upsell, but it starts to erode on the new business side as your upsell. And I think for every business, it's going to be different of where that inversion point happens. But the point being is it's going to happen, right? As long as your business is growing and you're maturing as an organization, especially if you're in like a hyper growth mode, you're going to hit that pretty quick. And frankly, that's where you get scale, certainly on an NRR basis, is when you can really reliably upsell and cross sell into your customer base, right? And that's where you really get scale as a business, because it ends up being that actually new business becomes a really small percentage of the overall revenue, right? When you're operating at a certain size and scale. And I think when you create a marketing waterfall, it has to be reflective of the reality of where you're at in that maturity cycle. You know, and I'll just give a couple examples. A really early stage startup is going to be so new business focused. In fact, that might only be what they contemplate in a waterfall. At like a mid-sized company or kind of out of the founder led and getting into machine focused, it's going to be new business plus upsell, because it's like, okay, great. We can drive, you know, incremental growth within the customers that we have. But then maybe you get a little bit bigger as a company and you make acquisitions, or you actually start to have enough engineering power to like come out with like fundamentally new products beyond platform. But these platform things are maybe now sold to different personas or buyer groups, and that introduces cross-sell, right? Which is a completely different marketing motion. But the reason I bring this up is just these become like varying degrees of basically complexity in the planning process. And so, for example, if I was CMO, and if I had visibility into the quota capacity thing, one of the first things I'd do is look at, of that total number, how much is being carved up across new business, upsell, cross-sell. That's going to quickly formulate, okay, what is my strategy for this year? What kinds of campaigns am I running? Am I on a suicide mission? Is this even fair? Right? That's really important to understand as you start to get into the planning process.
Chances are you're somewhere on the spectrum that Michael is describing when you consider the mix of the new business and expansion in your business. So here's a quick gut check. Look at your company's bookings plans for this year. What percentage is slated to come from new business versus expansion? And then consider, how does that percentage compare to the amount of time that you spend on each of them? If your plan calls for a 50-50 split between new biz and expansion, do you spend half your time on the upsell expansion funnel? My guess is that there might be a mismatch here. So how can you take steps to correct that? All right, let's get back to Michael. We've talked a lot about the preparation required to move from planning to execution, but at a certain point, you gotta actually execute. We've spent plenty of time on this show talking before about the operating rhythms that you can use to keep a business on track. But one in particular that I wanted to ask Michael about was the routine around pipeline creation. He's told us pipeline makes the engine go. So how do you inspect the pipeline efforts of the company so that you have enough to hit your goals? In the past, I've called this the pipe crawl meeting, the pipeline council. Michael calls it the funnel working group. No matter what you call it, what is this routine and how do you run it effectively? Here's Mike.
Fundamentally, it has to exist, right? It's one of the most critical functions of the business pipeline. And really, the core stakeholders have to own it. So it's the CRO, CMO. It's going to be SDR leadership. It's going to be RevOps leadership. It's going to be marketing ops leadership. It's going to be, sometimes too, you can break these things into two separate meetings. But for the purpose of this, let's just say it's one. You would also have sales, like top level leadership, attend these meetings as well. And it's going to be a weekly cadence. I've typically seen these things happen on a Friday. I don't know if that's necessarily right or wrong. That's what I've seen them happen in my career. It's kind of got to be like a little bit of an orchestrated meeting where either RevOps or marketing ops is going to run it. And maybe there's room on the top of the agenda to like talk through some new news. Here's programs we're doing, or here's like things that we've got going on. Here's some like regional events we've got. So there's like awareness of things that we're doing to drive pipeline, that at least inform everyone who's building pipeline, hey, here's kind of what's going on. And then there is that kind of reality check of like, okay, we're now going to stare at some dashboards and actually see how things are going. And I would say, at least from what I've seen, probably the best thing is there's kind of two ways to look at the data. One is like a funnel-based view, And then the other is kind of an actuals view. And this would be like in a quarterly view. I mean, if you're a monthly business, you could do the same thing, but I'm just speaking from a quarterly view.
Sure.
And on the funnel side, it's all that stuff I mentioned earlier, which is like, you know, MQA, MQL, and how are those like basically going through the funnel. And what's important there, I think, is of course the numbers, which kind of comes out in the actuals reporting, but the actual conversion rates. How are we seeing these actually convert through the funnel? If you rewind to Jan 1, when the plan was launched, well, we knew the bookings totals and we reverse engineered how many MQLs we would need, for example. Well, that was based on assumptions of how things would actually graduate through the funnel. And so through the course of that year, so let's just fast forward to, it's now March 31, let's just say our calendar year. Okay, well, what were the conversion rate actuals? Were those actually aligned with what we thought they were going to be? Were we too aggressive? Were we too this or that? And so that's a really important dipstick check, you know, through the course of the quarter is, are we seeing the velocity and the conversion rates that we expected? And then part two is, of course, the actuals. I'm a fan of, everyone's got their certain look or feel to it, but I like speedometers. They're just easy to see and easy to read. But I like to start with a percentage through the quarter. So, okay, great. It's Feb 1. We're 30 some odd percent through the course of the quarter. Now let's look at percentage basis. How are we doing across, you know, the goals across all the main buckets? And, you know, I guess the main buckets that I would be looking at is like on a total basis, percentage pipe up versus goal. And I'd then break that down into segments, right? And then I would also look at percentage pipe op count versus goal across the discrete op types. So the model was assuming a certain amount of new business upsell, across sell. And are we tracking against those goals? Because I'm sure you've seen this too, Sean, but it's like sometimes if you just look at the top level numbers, you actually get it right for the wrong reasons, right? Like, oh, like we're crushing it. We're doing really good. It's like, well, actually two of your business units are sucking wind and you're really overperforming on this other one. And it's like, is that okay? Like, is this a new normal? Yeah, was it an anomaly? Is this sustainable?
There's definitely like a danger of a zoomed out view.
Yes.
There, right? You have to, I think, look at it by segment. I've even had flavors of this meeting where we ended up having multiple meetings where you only talked about one business unit per meeting.
Yeah.
I think that maybe was overkill, but like if you have different leaders for each segment, it might make sense. How do you think about that? How do you accomplish everything you need to accomplish? Because I mean, you just outlined a ton of stuff,
yeah,
a ton of stages in the funnel,
yeah,
a ton of different business units. The more complex the business is, that doesn't even get into the new versus expansion stuff we were talking about before. How do you get everything across that you need to get across in this routine?
Yeah.
And make it a worthwhile use of people's time?
Yeah. So I think where we landed was kind of what you were saying. The one meeting that I was referring to, it is that top level meeting. And in that meeting, it's, are we hitting or not hitting? And if we are hitting, great. Are we hitting across all the segments? Where are the issues? And there's an understanding of where the issues sit at a segment level or even op type level. One click down from that, there is like a lower level meeting where it's like maybe a RevOps person, a marketing ops person, an SDR ops or SDR leader with maybe second line or frontline sales managers even. And then it's reviewing those numbers in a pool. And you go into that meeting understanding from the bigger picture where things are going well versus maybe where things are not going so well.
Got it.
And it's like, that's where it's like, you can come into those meetings with like a little bit of instruction on like, hey, so-and-so, this is turning out really well. What are you seeing? Why is this going so well versus over here? This is not like, do we have a laggard on the team? Is it one person dragging it down? Is it, you know, across the board, we're seeing certain issues with SDR productivity? That can become a bit more of a triage. And those groups, in theory, should influence the feedback that goes into like the next top level meeting of, hey, here's what we found, here's what we discovered, here's why that number is low.
Got it.
So yeah.
I think that cycle makes sense. I'll be very honest with you. Of all the routines that I've implemented in different companies, like this by far is the one that I have struggled with the most, right? And I honestly don't think I ever fully nailed it, right? I think I've had 4 or 5 different flavors of it, different iterations, different approaches. And I think one of the reasons, there are many, but one of the reasons that it is a difficult routine is it can very quickly devolve into finger pointing because of the breadth of stuff that we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
you mentioned, look, you got to look at each of the conversion rates for against the assumptions you made in your operating plan. Is SQL to discovery different than we expected? Is disco to op different than we expected? Is our win rate different than we expected?
Yeah.
And then you eventually have to have a conversation about what are we going to do about it? And so it can very quickly become tense when things aren't going well. If everything's in the green, it's the easiest meeting in the whole world, right? Like, great work, everybody. Pour some more gas on the fire and off we go.
Yep.
When things aren't going well, what have you learned about making this particular routine productive so that you can kind of get back to either finding a way to close the gap against the operating plan or leveraging the learnings that you're having in one business unit and another? Like, how have you made this thing a meeting that people look forward to and find value in?
Just to echo what you said, I've seen both sides of those equations too. I've seen like highly functional meetings where like people actually enjoy going to the meeting. Both sales and marketing feel like both sides are like equally bought in and really working well together. I've also seen the opposite. I've seen pretty dysfunctional group meetings where there becomes finger pointing and all this kind of stuff. I don't know. I'm a believer that it all starts with the leadership, right? And like leadership needs to work in the best of times and in the worst of times together. And if your default reaction is finger pointing, it's going to lead to fighting. It's going to lead to basically a meeting structure that doesn't work. And it's frankly going to, it's going to lead to missed goals. I'm just going to very bluntly say that if you're in these meetings and you're a CRO, CMO, and you're fighting, you're fundamentally not going to be delivering on the most critical aspect of your job, which is pipeline that's going to result in sales. In virtually all scenarios where I have been in those situations where they become toxic and finger pointy, those people don't last long. Because eventually that stuff nets out and misses. That becomes a CEO problem. A CEO steps in and goes, oh, this is dysfunctional. They're not actually solving the problem. You're gone. And in comes somebody new who has a clean, fresh perspective on things. I'm a believer in like the leadership sets the tone. And at the end of the day, it has to be all hands in, right? So if pipeline's low, yes, there's going to be issues. And I'll just broadly say too, maybe there's like these rare moments where you walk into these meetings and like every needle's green. 90% of the time, they are not all green. Like there is always stuff that is going to be broken. And it's always going to be broken because fundamentally, all the goals were cast on last year's data and it was implemented January 1. Well, guess what? Stuff moves really fast in tech. The ground is moving underneath our feet. There's new competitors. Buyers are changing the way they purchase. There's new messaging in the market. AI is disrupting things. Things change. And so like these needles are going to constantly be in conflict with these things because the goals themselves are based on how we once operated. You know, it's a matter of the leadership working together to say, hey, I've noticed that this is one of the areas that's deficient. How can I help? You know, and it becomes a collaborative discussion of hands all in, like, man, this is also my problem too. This isn't me about saying I've done my job and I'm the greatest person in the world and you guys are no good. Therefore, you're the person who should be fired. It doesn't work.
I really appreciate and agree with Michael's perspective here. He's right. It absolutely starts with the leadership. If you don't have an aligned, well-intentioned group of people who come to these execution routines with an open mind and a collaborative mindset, you might as well not have the routine. But like I said to Michael, I've struggled myself with this routine. And my guess is that some of you are sitting there listening to this and thinking to yourself, well, this sounds ideal, but it hasn't been my own experience. I'm the one on the hook for making these meetings work, but I get derailed by definitions and reporting questions and friction between sales leaders and marketing leaders. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to Michael was that he has been both a sales leader and an ops leader. And I think that that unique combo gives him a perspective here. So what has his experience taught him about making these execution routines just work better?
I think, and this is oftentimes, it's so hard to do because everyone's always buried, you're traveling, you're doing all these things, sure. But like preparation. So for example, in that top level meeting, I think whoever's leading that meeting, it doesn't have to be a significant amount of work, but there needs to be some pre-publishing of the tone of what that meeting is going to uncover. Because I'll explain. So like where these meetings go bad is the CMO, CRO jump on, and it's the first time they're hearing that the needles are like all red. And then they're surprised. It's more reactionary. You know, like what's going on? And like they don't even know what to do. They don't want to look foolish in front of their peers and all these types of things. I'm a believer in, man, if you could have, you know, again, marketing ops or rev ops, whoever it is in your organization, pre-publish like a highlights list of like, here's the topics we're going to cover. And maybe even a day before, there's like a mini prep meeting with the top levels of like, here's what we've uncovered and here's what we found. And then there's like a little bit of like agreement between those two. Here's how we want to talk about this with the team and like how we're going to talk about going about this with the team. In those live meetings, the perception in the room, just the ability to like believe in the path forward gets a lot stronger, right? And that's very different than like people in real time reacting to data that they didn't even know existed and then they're fighting.
I think it's a great tactic, right? Because then you're basically laying the groundwork before people even get there. Hey, like, we're going to talk about the shortcoming of top of funnel leads today.
Yeah.
Come with ideas for campaigns that we can use to maybe fill the void that we're going to have on our numbers, which, by the way, will have this impact on pipeline in Q2 and this impact on bookings in Q3 if we're not able to solve it.
Yeah, totally. And I'll also say, too, that there can be a bit of laziness, and I'm sure you've seen this too. There can be some laziness on this too, where let's just paint a picture. In a certain area of the business, the numbers don't look good. And there becomes a group understanding of, well, that's because of X. And let's just say, oh, it's this one SDR team. They're underperforming or whatever. And then it's like, okay, well, that SDR leader has to attend these meetings every week and say, here's what we're doing to like solve this challenge. But then it's like week 2, week 3, week 4. And it's like, okay, maybe it's not improving. And it's like, well, this person is clearly ineffective or whatever. But I would also challenge that like, there might be other reasons that that person is struggling. Maybe it's the persona that they're going after. And it's like, have we really built out solid persona materials that this SDR team is chasing? Or like, are they representing a new product? Are they in a new segment that we haven't gone after yet? So there's all these other things where it's like, I don't know, maybe it's the human mind and the condition, but we want to just like lock onto like, oh, this is the problem. And that is the only issue here. But it's like, never be satisfied with like, there's a single silver bullet for why things are struggling in certain areas. You constantly have to be on the search for like other things that could be influencing that outcome. Because sometimes there's like lagging indicators. Well, the lagging indicator could be SDRs are not doing well. On the front end, it's like, maybe the messaging is not resonating, right? And if we fix those two things together, maybe you actually get the result you want.
I think that's a good macro point for everything we've talked about, right? Which is, if you do the right legwork up front to instrument everything, understand all the levers that are available to you to make improvements in the business, you don't have to fix that one thing.
Right.
Right? Alone. You can look at, okay, these are all the different buttons and levers that are available to me to get the outcome that I want.
Yeah.
What is the best path to do that? If you get locked in on one and you just can't move the needle on that one thing.
Yeah.
And you have no other options, then you're sunk. But if you know, yeah, okay, this thing is not right where we need to be, but if we move this lever further up funnel, then ASP doesn't need to raise by 10% this year because we're going to have more opportunities to close in general, right? It's just an example.
Exactly. I just think it's a mentality you go in these meetings. It's just everyone has to have that mentality. Like everyone owns it. It's not just SDR. It's not just marketing. It's not just the reps. It's everyone on that collective call. If everyone's bought into that thinking, you just start to get creativity too. Even sales will start suggesting more, hey, have you like, what about this? What about that? And like, sometimes those things fall on the floor, but sometimes there's good ideas. It's all about working together, coming up with creative ways to overcome challenges that you've got.
Before we go, at the end of each show, we're going to ask each guest the same lightning round of questions. Ready? Here we go.
Best book you've read in the last 6 months?
To be honest, I spend most of my time listening to long format podcasts. And so
one of those is great. What do you got?
I'll pivot to that just because I've been getting into some of those recently. But a big fan of Lex Fridman. I'm not sure if you guys listen to him at all, but he gets some really top level interviews. I mean, if you want to listen to Mark Zuckerberg talk about Llama and LLMs and get really deep on that stuff, or a lot of the stuff with Elon Musk is really good. He gets into some great political content too, which is great. And then also too, just I took some personal time off in between jobs and really enjoyed a lot of the content from Andrew Huberman. Does a lot with just mental health and how to think about a lot of things in your personal life and so forth. And just, I think with the crazy work schedules that all of us have and so forth, you know, any tips or tricks that we can get on, you know, achieving better mental health is definitely beneficial.
Podcast recommendations always welcome here. All right.
Yeah.
favorite part about working in ops.
If you can actually understand a business challenge slash need, and then translate that into insights or analysis that get rendered into widely used dashboards in like a weekly, you know, or whatever cadence it is, daily basis, that actually have impact and change on the business. It's really powerful, you know, and that's the stuff that can like pay dividends like well into the future. I mean, there's a ton of things I love about it, but that's gotta be, because those take a long time to do right. And like, man, if you can nail it, it really pays off.
Flip side, least favorite part about working in ops?
Probably my Slack. And can you approve this for me? Yeah, I had all the contracts and approvals routing through me. And it's an unfortunate reality of business. And it's just one of those things that it becomes a time suck. Unfortunately, it doesn't add a tremendous amount of value to the business.
I don't think you're alone.
Yeah.
I posted something on LinkedIn about how I manage my Slack. And I've never had so many comments of just people feeling like, oh my God, I feel so seen with this. Yeah. Like it struck a chord with people. Like I think ops people and their Slack is a whole different topic. All right. Someone who helped you get to the job you have today.
Yeah. There was actually a guy that I partnered with, Alex Soleil, great business leader. He's now CEO at On24, but you know, he's got a long history in SaaS and rose the ranks through sales leadership, much like myself, but also then got into operational leadership and really kind of helped frame for me a lot of the powerful models for creating quota capacity and how to think about reporting and how to think about challenging growth targets and things of that nature.
That's awesome. All right, last one. One piece of advice for people who want to have your job someday.
I mean, I would say the most traditional path is probably, Sean, what you've done, which is starting in ops. And I always feel if you're just starting out, really try and get into probably like a deal desk function or maybe even like a marketing operations function. I think for people to be really successful in the role that you and I have, the closer you are to the data, the better off you're going to be, because it's really like, I just feel like in the modern RevOps function is becoming the centerpiece of data to SaaS organizations. And at the end of the day, like if the organization needs answers, they're coming to us. And if you're a leader on that team and you don't understand the data, you know, you're really going to struggle. So I think if you can start within an organization where you get really, really close to the data, it's going to put you at a tremendous advantage to really rise up quickly and be seen as a valuable resource inside the company by people that typically hold positions of power.
Thanks so much to Michael for joining us on this week's episode of Operations. If you liked what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to our show so you get a new episode in your feed every other Friday. Also, if you learned something from Michael today or from any of our guests, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, 6-star reviews only. All right, that's going to do it for me. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.